Welcome to the Victims and Villains Podcast. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I'm your host, Captain Nostalgia, and on today's episode, we are talking about Pokemon, the first movie in Pokemon Detective Pikachu, which is shockingly fresh to theaters this year. It is electrifying screens everywhere as we speak. And please help me welcoming our resident movie man, Mr. Dan Rockwood.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been following Pokemon since 1998, so I'm a solid 21 years into this franchise, into this fandom. So needless to say, I am very excited to dive back to 1997 when the first movie came out, and also talk about Detective Pikachu, the first ever live-action Pokemon movie. Took over 2 decades, but we're finally here, and the future is shocking, to say the least.
There's going to be a warning. I feel like there's going to be a lot of electricity puns pulsating throughout this episode. I am in much like Tim in this regards, where I was very much this like Pokemon. I was enthralled with Pokemon as a kid. And then I kind of reached that point where, much like Tim, as we'll discuss, he kind of had something tragic happen to him, and then it kind of took him away from his love for Pokemon. And that's kind of really what mine is. But you being an adult now and being Captain Nostalgia and having access to all the series thanks to Netflix, it's really reintroduced me to a lot of this fandom. And that's one thing that I've been excited about getting back into, like, a lot of the things that I grew up with and just being able to revisit them in this modern streaming age, because Netflix has the original Pokemon series. It has the original 3 seasons of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Power Rangers Zeo, Alien Morphers, Goosebumps, and, you know, just movies that I grew up with, like Spawn and stuff like that. So it's I fell off with it, but I've been excited to kind of get back into it. And Pokemon is the one video game in existence that no matter how old I get, I feel like you can play any game start to finish and just be entertained and the entire time, because there's just such a replay value in those games.
Yeah, I would say that's as close to an objective statement as we're probably going to get tonight, because there's so many. It's such a game that I think can appeal to so many people and so many age groups, too. I mean, you can absolutely have 5, 6, 7-year-olds pick it up and fall in love with it and play it. And then you literally have people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s and older playing at the competitive level, still training Pokemon and working EVs and IVs and trying to do all of these things inside the game. What I think is really miraculous is that when you think about Nintendo, which I'm a huge Nintendo fan, they just released their schedule for E3 this year, 2019, so I'm very excited for that. Already requested time off from work so I can be there and experience everything live, at least from my living room and my television. But when you think about Nintendo, you have kind of these like A-list, like, you know, first string franchises, right? You've got Legend of Zelda, Super Mario, and then you have kind of those second and third string series. And to me, at least, it always feels like Pokemon kind of takes that second string type of slot where people, you always hear about the new Zelda game and the new Mario game and new Pokemon game drops. I feel like it's big news for a kind of a short period of time, but then it kind of falls away and people don't talk about it anymore. And it's one of those games that people are very, very comfortable skipping generations if you're not totally into the series or not a hardcore fan. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild came out 2 years ago. We're still talking about Breath of the Wild now. It's still being mentioned. Mm-hmm. If you listen to any gaming podcasts, if you follow IGN, anyone out there, or if you're just a video game fan yourself, I mean, people are still getting into this game. But the last major Pokemon game that was released was Pokemon Sun and Moon, and people don't talk about that as much. And I guess technically Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. And, you know, it's just interesting to me how these games sort of take up the collective consciousness and they just sort of kind of drift away. But it's always there, and Pokemon for me is always something that you can go back to. So having this Detective Pikachu movie come out, and I never played the Detective Pikachu game. I considered it, but I thought, you know, let's go enjoy the movie, and then if I'm intrigued, I'll go pick up the game and see how it's different, and I can compare and contrast that later. This was the first ever real attempt of a live-action Pokemon movie, and I feel like that's a really big deal, and it's not getting the credit that it deserves in that way. I think a lot of people think it's just kind of silly, like, oh, it's Detective Pikachu, but it's like, no, like, this is a huge step, not just for Pokemon, but for Nintendo. And so I think that this really kicks off what I hope to be a very bright media future for Nintendo and for Pokemon. Now, am I saying that Detective Pikachu is going to be the Iron Man of the Nintendo universe? Maybe not. You know, I don't know. It could be. Who knows? Who has any idea where this could be going? But I hope it's successful. You know, you and I, we both saw it today, and I can say no spoilers. I enjoyed myself. It was a good time. I definitely think it's worth a watch.
Absolutely. And I want to talk about the future of the franchise kind of in the spoiler section, because a lot of the thoughts that I have on it, I can't jump into without completely ruining the end of this film. But I agree. I think that this is definitely a marvel in the franchise that has been just going strong for 20 plus years. And so we went to go actually see this at the Alamo, and it was my wife's first time. And Alamo is a really interesting experience if you ever get a chance to go see the Alamo. So if you go to like normally like a Regal or an AMC or like a Cinemark or like a more popular, more well-known franchise theater, you're gonna have like theater trivia or possibly New V Arcade is what our Regal down here shows. It's an awesome experience, but I love going to the Alamo specifically because what they'll do is they'll set the mood for you for the film prior. So I went to go see Pet Sematary a couple months ago, or last month actually, and they played like these trailers to like 80s films that were like horror centric, and birth death movies do that. And so like for our experience, Detective Pikachu, for the first half hour before the trailers, we got there and they basically just showed like all of these like toy commercials from the 90s and early 2000s in both American and Japanese, and you just got to see just how big this franchise really is, to where you know, I don't know if you remember, but like Kellogg's had like their own cereal out in the 90s that was Pokemon. You had Mac and Cheese had their own brand of it. They had their own Pop-Tarts at one, and that's just right here in America. Like they have like Cups and Noodles over in Japan. They even had, I kid you not, Pikachu mosquito cream. Like, I was like,
I love it. I would totally buy that. Yeah, sunblock. I mean, whatever. Anything you could slap Pokemon on, I would get. And I will say this: if you were a kid in the 90s and your school didn't ban Pokemon cards at some point, you didn't live. I mean, what was your childhood like? Come on.
Yeah, that was one of the most bizarre things about my childhood, was the banishment of Pokemon. It's like, of all the things that you can ban in schools, you are banning this. That's an interesting move. But no, I think that this is a franchise that definitely has been, it's always been strong, and it's always been at its, it's always had a core group of people. But you look at like highlights of games where, you know, 2 years removed now, people are still talking about, you mentioned Breath of the Wild, people still are talking about the Switch as a whole. I still hear people talk about the Mario game that was released on it, but then also at the same time, you know, you have heard people talk about, you know, Pokemon Go was a huge deal, it was a huge craze. And you know, we also had, I remember when Sun and Moon were released, it was a huge deal among like a lot of my friends that were talking about how they needed it, how they couldn't wait to play it. And when they got it, they were just talking about how it lived up to the hype. So I think that Pokemon has had these milestones. And I think Detective Pikachu is going to go down as a huge milestone for the franchise as a whole. And hopefully open itself up to more adaptations or more adventures set in this universe, because there's so much here and we're going to unpack it in the spoilers. But I agree, like walking out of this, like this is a marvel of a film for Nintendo, for Warner Brothers, for the Pokemon Company, for the franchise. Like this is a true marvel. And for not only the franchise, but also the video game movie genre as a whole, because how many films have we seen try to break this video game curse in the last couple of years? You look at movies like Assassin's Creed did poorly, was poorly received. You have Warcraft was poorly received. You have even last year's Tomb Raider film was very diversive, to where you had some people that liked it, but then you had some people that didn't really like it, and it underperformed at the box office as well. So we've seen a lot of these franchises not perform well. Even the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer has been met with such harsh criticism. So there was a lot riding single-handedly on the fact that this was a video game adaptation. And coming out of this, it's funny, it's heartfelt, it's completely worth investing your time and your money into.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that this world, it's so big and so varied, and it's so true. I mean, this game has been at least 8 generations now, I'm pretty confident to say, of the core games, and then you have so many other games, and then, of course, there's the anime and all these other animated films that came out, and it's just such a large world, and I'm really enjoying now, again, as a huge nerd and just as a huge fan of these things in general, we're getting so many varied Star Wars stories and so many varied Marvel stories and superheroes, and DC is stepping up, and you know, we had Shazam, which was phenomenal, and we're getting all of these different stories being told, and I would love to see that video game translation start to happen more often. I know people, especially people who identify as video game fans first, who really don't enjoy most video game movies. But I would say that there are definitely some really good ones out there. I really liked the newest Tomb Raider movie. I thought it was really decent. I had a lot of fun, and honestly, I like it better than the Angelina Jolie ones. I thought Resident Evil did a pretty decent job, not necessarily adapting the games frame for frame, but I think they were able to take that story and run with it and kind of do their own thing. With Resident Evil Apocalypse being one of my favorite movies just in general, I get a lot of joy from watching that movie. So seeing Detective Pikachu come out, I would love to see other movies tackle different parts of the Pokemon universe, whether it's a Red and Blue adaptation, or if you're looking at maybe following gym leaders, or looking at any members of the Elite Four. I mean, their journeys to become members of the Elite Four. Like, there's so many stories to be told. And I loved one of my all-time favorite Pokemon ended up in this movie, and I was very happy to see him rendered kind of in the live-action CGI space. So that was really cool to see as well. But yeah, I'm just super happy we got this movie, and I'm really excited to see just the reaction to it. I'm curious to see how people are going to feel about it, how they're going to think about Ryan Reynolds doing the voice, how they're going to think about the decisions that were made, and really the way Pokemon are displayed in general, because this is something that now we have, through the Pokemon Stadium games and the updates on the show and everything, we have a very clear 3D renderings of what these Pokemon actually look like. But when you go back to Red and Blue, and even Gold and Silver, all they were just sprites on a Game Boy screen. So it's cool kind of coming at it from that perspective of seeing, oh, you know, here's your Gengar on your Pokemon Red, but here is a Gengar fully realized and brought to life on the big screen. I think it's such a cool evolution, and I'm really happy that we have developed to a point where these kinds of things are happening. And it gives me hope that we might be able to see more successful, well-done video game adaptations, especially from the Nintendo side of things, which notoriously tends to keep things pretty close to themselves, and they don't like involving other people with their projects.
Yeah, and I think that the Switch has really, really been a game changer for them as a company, because you're hearing all of these like third party games that are coming on it. Like, I'm not a video game guy by any means, but the Switch has got both me and my wife in saving for one now and going to invest time and money. Nice. Because, you know, now you have the Mario game, most recent one, just looks amazingly gorgeous. We both want to play Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eve, Eevee. And then, you know, when they announced that Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight were coming to the platform as well, it was like, all right, let's invest now, because you just, you know, that has not happened in the past, where you have third parties coming to a Nintendo platform, and to also at the same time see them invest into them and to do these kinds of movies, I'm excited to kind of see what Nintendo is going to be doing next, because it looks like that they've definitely loosened up and are willing to at least hear people out and bring on board creators that are going to do projects like Detective Pikachu.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things about the Switch is how many indie games are on there, and third-party developers are able to come on and push their content to the eShop. And one of my favorite things to do is to go onto the Nintendo eShop on my Switch and just browse and just see. I bought two games last week around the time of my birthday, and, you know, were they good games? I hadn't played them. I didn't know. I hadn't heard of them before, but one was on sale for 61 cents.
Nice.
And the other one was on sale for 42 cents. And I watched the trailers and I'm like, you know, these look cute. These look silly. Even if I play it once and then just literally never do it again, like, I'll have gotten my money's worth. So I just bought them and I downloaded them, and I played them a little bit. I do want to do just like an obscure gaming party with some friends and just be like, hey, like, check this indie game out. It was 61 cents on the eShop. I bought it. It's on my Switch now. I own it. It's going to be there forever. So it's cool. You know, I love that you can get these different kinds of things of it. But, you know, at the risk of sounding like a Nintendo spokesperson, I'm not going to push the Switch too hard, even though I own one and I love it. And I do think the Pokemon Let's Go games are some of the finest examples of Pokemon gameplay ever. That's coming from someone who has played every generation and does not enjoy grinding for experience or things like that. So, yeah, I'm very happy with the way those games have kind of come about, and seeing that the way the movie has you know, come around, and I think it's going to definitely bring a lot of people.
Well, that too, and you're also introducing a brand new generation of it. Like, this is the first film that I've seen in theaters in a long time where you're having half your crowd is kids, and kids that are like passionate about this franchise. Because I've gone and, you know, covering films on the show, like we've covered kid films here and there, but you've never had kids that are like actually passionate about Pikachu and Charmander and Squirtle and Bulbasaur and like these this generation of the, you know, all of these Pokemon now that they're up to like 800, 900 characters. They're actually the way that we were for these characters at our ages, or at their age.
100%. I mean, it's so cool seeing new people get into it, and I love seeing younger people either out with their Switches and playing the games or talking about Pokemon. And now that people are going to be going and seeing this movie, I just think it's really cool. And honestly, it's a way for me, like, I'm not naturally good with children. Like, I've never been. But the fact that my interests are Star Wars and superheroes and Nintendo, it gives me sort of that connection with them that other adults don't necessarily have. So it's super easy for me if I see a kid playing a game or like watching, you know, the Pokemon, the first movie, or Detective Pikachu now, I can get in and sort of connect and just talk about these things on a level that they totally get and appreciate and understand. But there are plenty of other adults who wouldn't necessarily care quite as much. So I do think that's kind of the cool thing, that movies like this are a way, in a lot of ways, to kind of bridge the gap of, you know, the generations. But with all that said, I know going into this, we checked out Pokemon the first movie prior to seeing Detective Pikachu, kind of to hype ourselves up. And it has been decades since I have last seen that movie. And
really?
I think at least maybe a decade. I think I rewatched it 9 or 10 years ago. And I distinctly remember one of my friends not enjoying it very much. But it was the first time in a long time that I had seen it. And so revisiting this cast of characters and seeing Mewtwo again, and it was definitely brought up a lot of old feelings for me, but it was also just so curious viewing this through the 2019 lens that we have now. So it was very bizarre, but very cool and an enjoyable experience, and a very short movie. It's like an hour and 15 minutes long. So it went by super, super fast.
Absolutely. And This is interesting, because this just kind of puts you into perspective of how big Pokemon was at this time. And I make this argument all the time that you look at stuff like the DC animated films that DC produces that are straight to video, and then you look at something like Pokemon, the first film. These movies take $3 to $5 million to do. And their animation is absolutely gorgeous. I think that that's one of the things that has made this a movie to come back to several times, is just because of how good it looks. And even the series as a whole, like watching it 21 years removed and just coming back to it at any point, there's such a level of gorgeous nature to it. This film released in Japan July 18th, 1998, released in the United States here on November 10th, 1991, or sorry, 1999, like you said, was only made for $5 million and it grossed $173 at the box office. Like that's a huge, huge profit margin for not only the Japan market, but also just to kind of put in perspective how much that this film, this franchise was worth and is still worth. And I remember seeing this film in theaters and absolutely loving it. It was the only film that my dad ever took me to in theaters that he couldn't stay awake for. And it was me and my sister's thing, and he was just not into it. It's cool, you know, you make sacrifices for your kids.
Yeah,
but I love this film, and I revisited it about a year ago and thought that it held up for the most part. I think being a little bit more experienced in my film going and a little bit more developed in my critical nature, it's not a perfect film. I think that the last like 20 minutes kind of gets rushed, but I mean it's really overlooked, because I mean this is, we talk about how big of a deal Pokemon the Detective Pikachu is for this franchise now. At the time, 20 years ago, this was a crucial thing for the franchise as a whole as well, because it introduced two brand new Pokemon and really kind of moved the mythology forward in a way that the series hadn't experienced at that point.
And Mewtwo is one of my all-time favorite Pokemon, and I love his presence in the original Red and Blue game. And so having this movie, literally Pokemon the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back, was such an epic thing for me as a kid to go see. I mean, I must have been around 7 years old when this hit theaters, and I remember my mom took me after school someday, and it was just such a super fun experience. And I think I may have gone to this opening day. I think I got home from school, and my mom like surprised me with, and she took me and we went to see it. But it's was so enjoyable in theaters. I remember getting like really genuinely emotional over everything that was going on, and now seeing it and being able to be more critical about it, I realized just how justified Mewtwo was in a lot of his decisions, in that he never asked to be born or created. And then once he actually came to life, Giovanni kind of took him over and he was like, you know, you are my servant now. This is what you're meant to do. And Mewtwo obviously didn't like that and he freaked out. And Mewtwo totally kills people in that movie. Like, they kind of brush it aside, but those scientists in the beginning do not live through that explosion. Seeing everything that that kind of goes down, and just seeing like how terrifying and cool Mewtwo is. As my fiance brought up, as we're watching this movie, it was the first time she had ever seen it. What was going on in the 90s that this movie had to take such a strong moral stance on cloning and like just eugenics and in general? And it's just such a like bizarre plot line for them to follow, but it does fall in line with the game. And that's what I love about Mewtwo so much, that it's like every other Pokemon has occurred naturally except for Porygon and eventually Porygon 2. But he was created in a lab, and there's a lot of anger and hatred, and his psychic abilities really manifest themselves in violent ways. So it's cool. It was very cool to see this Pokemon come to screen and just see how powerful he is, and how like none of the trainers even stand a chance against him.
Yeah, and I think too that you see you talk about the emotional aspect watching it as an adult. There's very much an emotional aspect. I remember watching it yesterday, and just to prep for today, and they got to the scene where Ash is like basically comes between Mewtwo and like Pikachu, or one of the Pokemon that are fighting, and or it's Mew and Mewtwo, they're fighting, and he's turned to stone, and he was like, you know, who would you to be stand in the way of these humans? And you know, I see, he says, I see now that the circumstances of one's birth are irrelevant. It is what you do with the gift of life that determines who you are. But it's a deeply emotional film. I think especially in the ending, there are some really emotional scenes that, when you watch them, you might not catch them until you're a little bit older. Like the sequence where Pokemon or Pikachu and Pikachu are fighting, and you can just kind of see one of them is like, you know, just already in tears, the other one and not fighting, and the other one is, you know, on fighting but on the verge of tears. And just the music accompanied with that Brother My Brother song, such a perfect match, because it just encapsulates the emotion of it and the depth that Pokemon can bring. And that's just one thing that I also found really enjoying about Detective Pikachu, not to jump into it prematurely, but I just think that Pokemon, especially in its first big screen outing all the way back in the late 90s, you look and you see that this is a kids franchise, but when you're talking about themes of like, you know, social issues with like cloning, and is it morally right, is it morally wrong, or you're also talking about, you know, the gift of life and what to do with it, it's a surprisingly deep and intelligent film.
I totally agree. One thing I do disagree though, I actually hate the scene where they're fighting and the My Brother song is playing. I just feel like that's not. I get where you're coming from, and I agree in the context of what they're trying to go for, of like, look, like we're the same. Like, why are we fighting? We should be getting along. Totally makes sense. And for a kids' movie, yeah, that's fine. But for me, what I wanted was like just epic Pokemon crescendo music and just this insane Pokemon battle to happen. And all of these, you know, crazy like Pokemon abilities coming out and all that going down. And then you just get the My Brother song, and then the Pokemon are literally just sort of like pushing against each other. And then the Pikachu on Pikachu violence, yeah, one's just slapping the other and they're crying, and the slaps go on for so long that literally to me it felt like the animated version of like two dudes brawling and fighting, and one pins one down and just punches his face over and over to the point where like the other person becomes just not even recognizable due to like just a broken jaw and blood, and so that's what the Pikachus slapping each other reminded me of.
We are reminded of two different things.
I guess so. Two different kinds of people watching this movie will come away with two different opinions. I really liked that you mentioned Mewtwo's quote toward the end of the movie that I see now. The circumstances surrounding one's birth do not matter, is what you do with the gift of life that really determines who you are. I feel like that's a very poignant point in this movie, and it comes from a Pokemon, like not just a Pokemon movie, but an actual Pokemon. Like that's the kind of thing that I would expect to read in like a John Steinbeck novel, but no, it was from Pokemon, the first movie. And I also love Meowth's line where he says, oh yeah, we share the same earth, the same sky. Maybe if we start looking at things that are the same instead of always looking at what's different, we might find that we have a lot more in common and we can, you know, get along. In just the interest of just working together with other people, and where there's so many differences and so many issues in the world, I feel like Pokemon the first movie is the movie we need now more than ever. And I wish just more people would identify with that message and just accept that they're good things to try and go after, that, you know, just being mean or rude or outright disrespectful to someone for no reason apart from the fact that you want to get your way, or you want to, you know, get or do something without any regards to anyone else, that's not really a great way to live. And I feel like Pokemon does a good job of, you know, really demonstrating that. Which says a lot coming from a franchise where the entire point is you take these animals and make them fight each other until one faints, and then you have to rush them to a hospital so that they can be rehabilitated. but apart from the clear animal violence similarities there, I think it's a very really introspective emotional series that doesn't always get the kind of credit that it deserves.
No, I totally agree, and I think that line that Meowth says too is, even watching it now, it's still powerful, and it still hits you right where you're like, it just kind of stop where you're in the midst of all this violence, and you're like, well, why can't we just get along? Like, you know, what does it matter what our beliefs are or what our passions are, where we've come from? You know, it is something, and I think that this is a very relevant issue that, you know, even 20 years later, that we still need more than ever. And with that, I'm going to head into a commercial break. But before we get there, what would you rate the Pokemon the first movie on the Rorschach rating scale?
Oh, man, Pokemon the first movie, I feel like there's so many factors that go into this, and it's like almost not fair. So I feel like I should almost rate it as like 7-year-old me, but I'm not gonna do that. I'll rate it as 28-year-old me. Pokemon the first movie, I'm gonna give it a solid 3 out of 5 Rorschachs.
I'm gonna go 3.5. I think it's a film that holds up fairly well. Definitely has those layered morals. It paces itself really nicely. The animation's beautiful, but I think it's just that last like half hour that really keeps it from being everything it could have been. Because when you look at anime as a genre, here you have a genre that isn't afraid to take hours to tell one single story. You look at an arc can last anywhere between 10 to 22 episodes. And when you factor that in, that's 5+ hours sometimes. And So I think that they kind of abandoned the anime formula. So it's possible that this film could have been rushed to get out there, and that definitely shows. But so that's we're going to be back on the other side talking Detective Pikachu spoilers. But if you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That's one death every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. Call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. You can text anonymously to 741-741 or go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. You guys can get resources to get connected to counselors, more crisis hotlines, or churches. This is the reason that we push this content, is so that you guys can know that there is hope, that there is a better way, and that there is always reason to hold on to tomorrow. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Victims and Villains. We are talking Detective Pikachu on this episode, and for the remainder of this show, we are spoiling this. So this is the official shocking spoiler warning for Detective Pikachu. But before we get there, we had something, they did something cool for opening night, and that is they gave away Pokemon Detective Pikachu cards. I have not actually opened mine yet. You did. What did you get?
I did. So originally what I got was a Detective Pikachu card. And in addition to that, I had a Lickitung card.
Nice.
And so my fiance also got Detective Pikachu, and she got a Charmander card. Charmander is one of my favorites, so I traded my Lickitung for her Charmander. So yeah, now I have a Charmander card, a Detective Pikachu card, and there are a couple other like promotional cards in there as well that were not playable Pokemon cards. But I have a huge Pokemon card collection, and so I'm really excited. These are probably like the first new cards I've gotten in a couple decades, so I'm excited to slide those into my binder. But I've got my collection's kind of ridiculous. I mean, I've got, you know, all the top hits, Charizard, Blastoise, Venusaur. I've got Alakazam. I've got the original like ancient Mew card that I think they released as a promo item, I think around the time the first movie came out.
Nice.
I've got some of the promo cards from the first movie. I think I've still got the Electabuzz. I got like a first edition Kabutops, and just a bunch of other. I mean, if you're looking at like the original 151 Pokemon, there's really only a handful that I don't have. And then I have a bunch of the trainer cards as well. Like I believe I have Giovanni. Lieutenant Surge was one of my favorites, and then I started collecting some of the newer ones too. But as we got into the future generations, so that's when I kind of stopped collecting Pokemon cards. But I've got so many different good ones. Aerodactyl and Omastar, Mewtwo, yeah, all the legendary birds, all those. So my collection's kind of insane, and it's something that I really love and enjoy, so I'm very excited to throw these cards in there with them.
So I stopped collecting cards similarly to Tim. I got out of Pokemon around 10 or 11, which is a shame to me as an adult because I'm so passionate about like things I grew up on now. And but let's go ahead and open this and see what I got. Hoping for Detective Pikachu. I don't really care. My favorite one is Blastoise. Nice. Or not Blastoise, Squirtle. Squirtle is my favorite.
I do love Squirtle. I'm super excited. I also collect amiibos, and they are releasing a Squirtle amiibo at some point over the summer. And I've been checking like Amazon and Best Buy every day to see when I can pre-order one, and they are not up and available yet. But I'm very excited to get a Squirtle amiibo.
Oh, sweet. All right, so I got this, like, promotional flyer throughout the course of this. Looks like they have an Unbroken Bonds for Sun and Moon ad for the games. There's an app called the Pokemon TV, so that's cool. All right, so I have first. Oh, cool. I have all of these. Looks, man, I really want this hat, the fresh coffee hat. So I have a holographic Morlore, a HP 50, and a Detective Pikachu on coffee break. I love coffee, so I'm drinking it right now, actually. And I watched, I drank it while I watched the movie. So this is really cool. And I like how in it kind of gives a description in of how they are shaped within the world of the film.
Yeah, I think I you know, going into this movie and knowing from past movies that they've done, I was hoping they would do some kind of promotional thing like this, and I'm really happy that they did. And I'm actually, I just glanced at the back of the card, it's the exact same design as like the original Pokemon cards, so they're still it's like an authentic, like genuine card, so I really appreciate that attention to detail. Yeah, I'm so curious to see, like, in the coming weeks, how many of these cards are going to be revealed, which ones, like, might end up on eBay and sites like that, because I do imagine that some of these could potentially be a lot rarer than others. And I'm not positive how many cards there are total, but if I look at the flyer that they included, it looks like there's a Mewtwo card, there's a Greninja card, and some others. And so I'm very curious to see how many of them are actually out there, and I really, really want to get my hands on the Mewtwo one. It looks super cool, and Mewtwo is one of my favorite Pokemon, so it'd be awesome to have.
Yeah, the Charizard, the Mewtwo, and the Greninja ones all, like, just look amazing. Visually, just Blaze Pokemon currently, but I just love the visual of them, like the GX series, it looks like, to where it looks like they're a little bit more in-depth, visually speaking, and not only to mention that there is also more detail to them than the other cards that are in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's jump into this movie, man. And the first Pokemon that we got to see in this was a Cubone, which was an interesting choice.
Yeah, that was a heartbreaking moment. For those who are not aware, so a Cubone wears the skull of its dead mother's head on him. And there are a bunch of really just sad, heart-wrenching comics online of a Cubone, like, watching its mother just being killed or dying of natural causes, and then waiting for the body to decompose and taking the skull and then wearing it and carrying it around. So seeing the Cubone crying, they didn't lead into this, but I thought that its mother had died very recently, and it was just very upset. And that cry to me seemed, it felt like a wounded animal, like it really dug into me. But then the scene kind of turns comical, and we're introduced to our main character, and we have his friend Jack, who is played by
Dupender.
Yeah, Karen Sony. It's funny because, yeah, he's a Dupender in the Deadpool films. I feel like I knew him earliest. He was in a series of AT&T commercials. I don't know if you remember those, but
really,
he was in a couple of AT&T commercials, and he has this really, like, stupid funny bit where he's in the car with his partner and he's talking about Instagram likes and how he's, you know, trying to really break through the like game, and then he gets an update and he's like, oh, my selfie just hit 100 likes. And then he laughs. He's like, oh, 100. He's like so excited about it. You definitely got to look him up online. Honestly, I think, not that we're rating commercials, but I think AT&T has some of the best commercials out there, because they've got him and his partner in a bunch of commercials. And then they also have the AT&T girl, who I'm a little in love with. She's wonderful. And I believe that actress also went on to be Squirrel Girl, which I actually don't know what the latest is with that. I feel like people were talking about that for a while, and then it just kind of disappeared. So honestly, I don't know if that was released and I just never heard about it, or if it's still in production, or if it died. I don't know. But yeah, we open the movie with that scene, and it's I really liked. I was kind of hoping that we would get like this really epic, like big music crescendo, like Pokemon battle, Pokemon catching scene. And we didn't really get that. And I will say that that is really my only disappointment with this movie, is I was hoping for newly recorded, really great music, either of the original Pokemon theme or of the Red and Blue theme, or orchestrate new music altogether. And there were elements of all of those things in this movie, but it did not hit the kind of emotional beats that I wanted it to. I would have really preferred taking their time and really playing out these moments to, you know, identifiable Pokemon music. But that aside, I feel like this was a really great way to introduce our main character here, who is played by Justice Smith, so the character Tim Goodman. You know, I like seeing his kind of his life, and he's living with his grandmother, and his dad lives in a faraway city, and his mom passed away when he was younger. And so it takes these beats to very quickly show, you know, who this person is and where they're going. And he even sets up that he's an insurance salesman. What kind of insurance exists in the Pokemon world? I have no idea. But it actually depressed me. Not that I sell insurance, but he was like, oh, like, you know, could it be up for a promotion soon? And his friend's like, oh, what's your promotion? Senior insurance salesman? And he was like, no, that's actually two spots ahead of where I am right now. And that, I love my current job. I genuinely do. But that is the next like step up in my position, is just my position, but a senior role. And so that hit close to home, where I was like, oh, man, that's the Pokemon is just cutting right into my soul right now. But yeah, I think they did a really good job of like kind of introducing this character and really laying all the groundwork we needed very early on so that we could get right into the story.
So I either didn't really know that, or I had forgotten that about Cubone and his mother and the show. And to kind of open up on that Pokemon kind of gives me an even more sense of depth that this world has and the richness that's within it. Because a lot with there's a big overarching theme of, you know, overcoming grief within this. The course of this movie, because you have Tim, who is there's a couple of scenes where you can see that his mother's death really affected him, but then he's also reeling from the death of his father, and that's an overarching theme as well, and it's showing basically how he's coping with it. There's a great scene between him and the chief cap or the captain where he was talking about how we all, you know, we all grieve in our own ways, and how, you know, we want to, you know, how we basically how we all grieve in our own ways, I think, is basically what the bottom line goes down to. And I think even with, you know, Pikachu, even there's a level of depth of a theme of grief that's kind of going on with him, to where he's grieving the loss of his memory, to where he can't remember anything. Like anyone who's ever woken up with amnesia, I've never experienced it, but I imagine that it's terrifying being in a world that the people that you once knew, like your husband, your wife, your significant other, your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, you don't know these people anymore. Like you don't understand your role in life. And that theme of searching is very predominant, especially after grief, especially after losing a parent. You constantly are saying, what do I do next? And to introduce that theme with Cubone, I think is a added layer of awesomeness and just kind of very subtle attention to detail that this world brings.
Totally. And that's where I've been saying, even leading up to this movie, that I feel like a lot of people are going to go into this movie thinking, oh, it's just a silly, funny live action Detective Pikachu movie, without really taking the time to consider all of these heavy, important elements that are going into it. But there is definitely the element of grief, that element of loss, that kind of perseverance of trying to accomplish this goal and get to the bottom of this crime. As you know, despite everything that has been lost, you can still take solace in trying to uncover everything that happened. I really like that Detective Pikachu is revealed upon the first meeting that he was his father's partner. And that's something that this world sets up, that just about everyone has a Pokemon partner. And very few people have a team of Pokemon, it seems like. We don't really see that at all. It's always one person, one Pokemon. It reminds me of like the season one of Heroes for the company. It's like one of us, one of them, you know, one human and one enhanced person. And it's I really love seeing just the diversity of Pokemon in Rhyme City. I think one of the early estimates, and even just from the first trailer or two, there were about 70 Pokemon revealed. I think there were quite a bit more in this final film, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what the total count is, because they're just all over the place. I mean, every screen is just jam-packed with Pokemon sometimes, and so it's just really cool to see. I think Detective Pikachu, seeing that he was his father's partner, is a really, like a heart-wrenching moment too, and realize that they're kind of on the same path now, where, yeah, Pikachu has this amnesia, but he also knows what he needs to do, and he needs to, like, solve this crime and figure out what's going on.
And I think, too, one of the best placements of Pokemon within this world, because this world's littered with it, because you have your opening with Mewtwo, and then it quickly fades to this like country shot, to where you're getting to see this vast open world, and you're seeing a lot of the wind Pokemon. And when he first gets to Rhyme City, there's a scene, and it was in the trailer, where Machop was actually directing traffic. And you never really see why he's directing traffic, and it pans out, and there's this huge Snorlax just chilling in the middle of the road, just asleep. I was like, man, one of the best scenes in the whole movie, well placed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's just so many like just little references like that, and I love that. And the opening of this movie did very much remind me of the opening to Civil War, because literally it is a car accident caused by this mysterious entity, and you're not really sure what's going on. And I was just like, man, like totally Winter Soldier right now. Like, it's just this is insane. That's Tony Stark's parents in there. This is going to be absolutely ridiculous. I was not expecting this movie to open up. Literally, the first scenes are of Mewtwo in his hibernation chamber, and he's coming alive, and you can hear his voiceover, which is very reminiscent of Pokemon, the first movie. Mm-hmm. And you see him coming alive and attacking and just being this terrifying, powerful force that he is. And then you can see him flying and going after the car and everything that's happening there. And of course, it's revealed that our main character, Tim's, it was his father and Pikachu in that car, and Pikachu has amnesia, doesn't know what's going on. So now they're trying to get to the bottom of, what were they onto, first of all, that would make someone want to attack them, and who attacked them, who's responsible for his father's death, and what is going on, is there a larger conspiracy that they can uncover?
Yeah, which I think that what I came in, I don't know what I was expecting with this movie. And I think, too, that like I kind of expected, like you said, like I think a lot of people are going to come in expecting this very goofy, just fun movie. But there's a lot of depth into it. And I think what that depth also plays into also at the same time is just the As Pikachu put it, it's very twisty. There's a lot of twists and turns within this movie that I just wasn't expecting. And I think that that's one of the things that make this such a good film, where there are a lot of twists that you're not expecting, like who the main villain is, the main villain being Howard Clifford. Like, you know, his whole entire research was to try and basically transfer his consciousness into Pokemon so that he could find a way to almost be immortal. And then you have the twist with his son Roger being a Ditto the entire course of this film, where again I really wasn't expecting that, because for the most part, like, I really believed that Roger was this villain, and then they had the twist where it was Mewtwo, and then they had the twist again where it's Roger was the Ditto and Howard is the real man behind this. And like, I was blown away. Like, I just wasn't expecting a lot of those twists and turns. And for the most part, I think that when they had kind of set the course for Howard, or for Roger being the main villain, it made sense, because if, you know, when you talk about mythology as a whole, not just Pokemon, but generic mythology, you want your hero to be the exact opposite of your villain, and vice versa. And you have this guy that, here you have Tim, who is the protagonist that had this like disdain, this, you know, this disconnect with his father because of this bad experience. And then you have this other guy named, you know, Roger, who has the same thing, but kind of goes down a different path to really undo everything. And that really, to me, kind of like, it made sense that could be a motive for a villain. And then you're like, oh, wait, no, Mewtwo's the villain, which also kind of made sense. And then it made sense the way that they just brought it back to Howard. Like, well-paced film, and the amount of twists and turns that it created was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it definitely could have just been a pretty straightforward movie, but you're right. They did layer a lot of these character elements and plot developments kind of over on top of each other, and they kept on sort of revealing and peeling things back repeatedly and in different layers, so that you could kind of see little bits of the plot coming out at different times. What were your thoughts on the Mr. Mime scene? Because he, in this movie, I think there are really two reactions to it. People are either completely horrified by him, or they think it's hysterical. And I'm kind of in the middle. I'm not really sure how I feel about it yet.
I loved the Mr. Mime scene. I thought it was one of the funniest scenes in the world. And they really utilized Tim in that scene really well. And like, the design of it, like, it is really creepy, because these Pokemon, they do look so good and so detailed, where you have Pikachu that looks this like really adorable. Then you have Charizard that just looks like this completely fierce guy. And then right in the middle, you have a Mr. Mime that, as a cartoon character, looks bonkers and bizarre and weird. And when you bring that into live action, like, it can be a little bit terrifying, but I love terrifying. So I really enjoyed the scene. I thought it was one of the strongest scenes within the film. And they really utilized the aspect of Tim as a detective and kind of following in the footsteps of his dad really well as well.
I totally agree with that. And I love how he's able to kind of get into Mr. Mime's head and realize that everything is a mime to him. But also, even more than that, that Mr. Mime's abilities kind of mirrored and taken from the game, and that he can create like walls and things like that. And I could be mistaken, but I do think that the move light screen in the game is similar to what he's able to do in the movie. I love the moment. That scene turns so dark when he starts like miming, pouring gasoline on him, and I'm like, is he gonna light him on fire? Like, this is. And then he steps out and he like brings the trail of gas away, and then he drops the match after he gets the information, and Mr. Mime looks terrified. And I think that's something that there's a lot of laughter in the theater, but it's like from Mr. Mime's perspective, he's about to burn to death. He thinks he's about to be killed. And that is horrifying. And they just cut the scene, and then through editing, they move on. But it's like, how does that end? Like, what happens to Mr. Mime? I'm so curious, because at the very least, if he has any kind of anxiety or physical manifestations of stress, that is going to be an unbelievably stressful situation for him to be in. It was such a dark scene that was like played with, and I appreciate that they included it in this movie, but it does, I have a lot of questions about it, because Mr. Mime was not having a good time by the end of that interrogation.
No. And I think it is one of the darker scenes within the course of that, but you can just add that question to the list, because obviously people have already started, you know, putting together this like what if question, what happens list, especially after Infinity War, like what happens when Cap goes to Vulmer. Like that's a whole podcast in and of itself, but you know, I really enjoyed it. And but how do you think Ryan Reynolds did as Pikachu?
Well, I should preface this by saying I really enjoy Ryan Reynolds. I know there are people out there who just don't like him for whatever reason. So I think he did a very good job. I think he did a very Ryan Reynolds job, which to me is a good thing. I think he brought his signature humor and his sarcasm and his way of just like improvising. I feel a lot of his scenes went really well. I can't confirm if this is true, but Abby's telling me after the movie that Ryan Reynolds had improvised through a lot of this movie. And so theoretically there are recordings out there of just like R-rated material that they couldn't use because he would just rant and swear and do everything that they could not include in a Detective Pikachu movie. It reminds me of my friend went to a Comic-Con years ago where Alan Tudyk was there, and he did a panel, and he went to see Alan Tudyk's panel, and he was talking about playing the role of King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph. And Alan Tudyk was saying that there were moments where they would just let him in the voiceover studio just kind of do his own thing and you know, say a bunch of lines and see what fits and what sticks. And so somewhere in the Disney vault is King Candy ranting about race riots and other just, you know, not rated G material that will probably never see the light of day. But Alan Tudyk was able to share that with everyone at his panel that day. So I think Ryan Reynolds probably had a very similar thing going on with Detective Pikachu. And yeah, I think he was perfect for the role. I think he's a huge nerd deep down. I really love him as Deadpool. And you know, now if you were to ask me my three favorite Ryan Reynolds movies, it's Deadpool, Detective Pikachu, The Proposal, easily. You know, Hitman's Bodyguard was actually not too bad either. But yeah, very, very long answer short, I enjoyed Ryan Reynolds in this movie. I'm happy he got the role of Pikachu. I'm not sure what other actor could really have done him justice. Maybe Josh Gad, just because I really love Josh Gad, and I think he also has an appreciation for the character and for everything, but it would be a very different character if he did it. I have not played the Detective Pikachu game, but from what I've heard, the way he is in that game is kind of similar to how Ryan Reynolds plays it in the movie. So yeah, I enjoyed his performance. What were your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. He is perfect for this role, especially the way that he is written, to where he is just this ball of electricity that is addicted to caffeine, but he's like also this like cute and adorable little guy. And it's almost kind of like the opposite of Deadpool, to where you know what you're gonna get with Deadpool, but from a Pikachu who's this like really cute and cuddly creature, you don't really know what to expect. and you don't know really what he's going to say next. And I think going back to the Mr. Mime scene was, it was just really, it was just a really, this really funny moment. But then there's also these really touching moments. And I think Reynolds and Justice Smith, which we had, you know, previously talked about, they did, they played really well off each other, to where they're, I think that was one of the things too that I really enjoyed about this film, was just the arc that they shared together, and just the nature of it and how natural it felt. Like, it never felt forced. And there's that scene where they're sitting there talking, and he's kind of sharing about like what happened between him and his dad, and you just kind of see, you know, Pikachu like sympathize with Tim, and his ears kind of go back, and he's just this really cute, really adorable creature. And they just kind of have this moment. He's like, you know, I haven't been the nicest to you. And he's like, no, you haven't. And it's just one of the best moments, I think, in that film. And then their relationship evolves so quickly, and you can definitely see that they're family and partners and friends by the point that they reach that in the film. And Ryan Reynolds just being, you know, quick with the humor, but also just also being really heartfelt and emotional. You can just kind of see that I feel like he made this movie for his kids, to kind of be like, you know what? You can't see daddy play, you can't see him play Deadpool, but I'm going to make this Detective Pikachu movie for you. And I think that Ryan Reynolds just plays Ryan Reynolds in this film, but he does a fantastic job. And like you said, like, I just look, coming out of this film, I can't imagine anyone else playing him after this.
Yeah, and I think I need to look more into Ryan Reynolds, but he always strikes me as someone who is kind of a big nerd himself, and that's why I think he's so great as Deadpool, because he has an appreciation for the source material. And I think Detective Pikachu, he probably also has an appreciation for it. There was a video that was shared with me the other day. I haven't watched it all the way through, but it was children asking Ryan Reynolds questions.
Oh my goodness.
Because the journalist interviewing him said, if you don't answer a question from us, you're just evading because you're not supposed to talk about the movie. But if you don't answer a question from a child, it just means you hate children. So you just have to answer their questions. So I didn't watch the entire video, but the very first question was a child asking, who would win a fight, a Charizard or my mom? And Ronald Reynolds, he was just like, I'm sorry, kid, but Charizard would absolutely smoke your mom. There's no contest whatsoever. So I appreciate that. Like, he gets into it, and like, he knows Pokemon. I feel like he appreciates Pokemon, and he fully understands the kind of movie that he's involved with. But honestly, my favorite thing that I hope to come out of Detective Pikachu is seeing Deadpool make fun of him being Detective Pikachu in Ooh. You know, the next Deadpool movie.
Yes.
I think that's going to be a very, very funny moment if we're able to get that, which I'm pretty confident we'll be able to. I don't think Ryan Reynolds in those movies comments on so many of his other previous roles. There's no way he's not going to mention the fact that he voiced an electric mouse for an hour and 45 minutes. But yeah, it's... I really loved just the way this movie progresses. And I mean, like, all the characters that we meet and get to know are so cool. And I feel like they're all unique in their own way. I really loved the character of Lucy Stevens, played by Catherine Newton. And I love how she just very early on was tried to play off as like, oh, this detective, like, I'm getting down to things. And then she's like, oh, you know, I'm a journalist. And then she's like, oh, I'm an unpaid intern at the studio. But then she's the one that ends up like helping to crack everything. And she becomes a super important part of this team that they're growing together. And I love her Psyduck. And I'm so happy Psyduck was a big part of this movie. Because that's a big thing about Psyduck, is that he's just this like derpy, dumb Pokemon, but he's actually super, super powerful and has incredible psychic abilities. So I really love that they were able to include that in this movie.
Absolutely. I think Psyduck's was kind of one of those Pokemon that I never really liked growing up. So like I came out of this film having a big appreciation, and I actually have it right here. So Burger King right now has been in their kids' meals, they actually have Poke or Detective Pikachu. And this week they have Psyduck as their toy of the week. And a friend of mine is super good friends with a lot of the employees at our local one. So I've been slowly collecting all of the Detective Pikachu toys. But the Psyduck one, I was kind of like a little bit disappointed with it because I never really liked Psyduck. But I had this movie changed that for me. And Psyduck became one of the best characters and created some of the best moments in this film. For one, the scene where they had all of the Grunge ninjas, or however you say it.
Greninjas,
that sequence where it's going through the garden of the mutated Pokemon, whose name is also escaping me because it's after 150.
The Torterra Garden.
Psyduck, that is one of the coolest scenes in this whole movie. And also the other scene is when they're actually on the way to the lab and Psyduck is just slowly placing his feet into Pikachu's face. And he's like, get it out. I'm not going to do it. And it's one of the funniest sequences within the course of this film. But I want to ask you this because I'm just going to kind of jump into this. We talked about, you know, the possibility of this really opening up a brand new world for the franchise of Pokemon as well. But given the way that this film ends, where it's revealed that Mewtwo had basically taken Tim's dad, his consciousness, and planted him into a Pikachu and said that I will bring your dad back once the sun comes. Do you think that, and then by the end of the film, you know, Tim's dad's restored, it's revealed that he's Ryan Reynolds in human form, and, you know, they basically start this brand new relationship to where everything's like back to, I don't want to say like back to basics, but it's like it's better than it previously was. Do you think that kind of writes off any future installments? Like, where does the franchise go after this, I guess?
I think if Men in Black 2 was able to bring back Tommy Lee Jones and make a quasi-successful movie, that any other movie can do anything they want ever. I think it's very easy right now at the end of this movie to see it as a completed story. And I like that they do that. I think this movie would stand alone on its own very well. If they ever wanted to do a sequel, there's any number of, you know, written ways that they could go in and either do it completely differently, or, you know, just redo what they did where they kind of transport his soul back into a Pikachu if needed. But I think what would make more sense is that you have some kind of neural device that would allow Tim to understand the Pikachu, and the Pikachu could still retain Ryan Reynolds' voice. And you could pass that off as just, oh, you know, you can adjust the voice to what you want and you're comfortable with your dad's voice, so let's keep it as that. So I think it doesn't write off future installments. I think it wraps things up nicely if they decide to keep it as one go. But if they ever want to do they could definitely do that.
I think too that you look at, and I've said this many times, but Star Wars is a franchise that has the possibility of telling numerous stories because it's a galaxy far, far away. And it's just that it's a galaxy. You look at how many different portions of the the galaxy, comics and video games and novels and even TV shows, for lack of a better thing, have explored in their 40 years of existence. But you look at how much the movies have just explored. It's always been the Skywalker saga or things related to the Skywalker saga, because Rogue One still related to the Skywalker saga, Solo still related to the Skywalker saga. So you just look and you see all of these things and they haven't explored it yet. And I'm hoping that this film is successful enough to where we're gonna kind of head into newer areas of the franchise that aren't just the 150. You're introducing audiences to newer Pokemon that you can also do, because there's another version of Pikachu that's been discovered since. It's I can't remember what, it's not Raichu, but it's another version that's he's newer within the last 10 years or something like that, but he looks just like Pikachu. You could definitely tell the story with that, or make Ryan Reynolds do a cameo. But there's so much within the mythology that you don't really need Ryan Reynolds, and we still haven't. And this opens the door for also seeing a Ash Ketchum live action big screen.
Yeah, I think bringing Ash Ketchum back would be great. Honestly, the thought that I had as the credits started rolling is I would love for them to do it Harry Potter style and show the story of Red. So in the original Red and Blue, the characters initially are either the character Red or the character Blue. And if you watched one of the Pokemon series, the name is escaping me right now, but there was a Pokemon series that followed the character of Red, and it went through Kanto and the different gyms that they battled and kind of going through that. I think Pokemon is such a wonderfully large and diverse world, especially where you have the original 151 Pokemon to work with, and all of the history that's there. And especially in the original games, there's a lot of references that there was a great Pokemon war that took place. And Lieutenant Surge even talks about, serving and fighting in the war alongside his Raichu. There's a lot to pull from. So I would want them to adapt a Pokemon Red story and tell it over the course of 8 movies. And each movie could be building up to a gym battle. So you have the 8 gyms, and you could pick a movie to fit a couple gyms in, and then the final movie, it could be battling Giovanni at the Viridian City gym, and then moving onward to the Elite Four and battling and defeating the Elite Four. And you could even include the post-credits scene for that could be a battle with Mewtwo, because you are able to unlock and capture Mewtwo at the end of that game. But there's so many different stories. You could have literally everything that you do in Team Rocket's secret hideout in that game. That could be a movie all on its own. The Pokemon Tower and everything surrounding Lavender Town, that's a story on its own. Everything about Cinnabar Island and the Seafoam Islands. There's a lot of diversity here, and I think there's a good chance for storytelling. And so that's where I would want them to tackle the original Pokemon story in a way that we've never seen it before, and have it span multiple movies and really tell this story the way that it should be told, and make Team Rocket be represented the way that I feel they should be represented, where they are a criminal organization. In many cases, they are a terrorist organization, and the show kind of downplays and makes fun of them through the characters of Jesse and James. I would love to see a movie series take those characters more seriously and just properly tell the story the way it's meant to be told.
With Team Rocket too, you can make them darker. We've seen these kind of other versions of these characters kind of just really come in and just absolutely be brutal. Batman is a great case. You look at where that character is in Batman and Robin, and then you see where they are in Batman Begins, like it's a complete tonal shift. And I think that in the series, like it, yes, it's targeted for kids, but if you opened up that world to be targeted towards maybe young adults, you could definitely make it a lot darker. And I would like that, honestly. I think a Team Rocket movie, I think, would be pretty sweet. Like maybe doing like an origin movie, like showcasing like how they became Team Rocket, like how they meet, how they kind of, you know, targeted their enemy towards Ash and stuff like that, or just in general, like how they got started.
Well, here's what they should do. So Nintendo, if you're listening, you know, this is my movie pitch to you. Giovanni is one of my favorite characters in the Pokemon universe. I think he's one of the most complex. He has a lot of interesting motivations behind him. He's a brilliant criminal, but he's also just very intelligent, and he does have some compassion there as well. I think he's represented really interestingly in the show. He's shown as like this very mysterious, shadowy figure at times. And in the game as well, he's revealed later on, and as the leader of Team Rocket, and I guess spoilers for the original Red and Blue. So if you have not played it and don't want spoilers, I guess stop listening now. But it's revealed that he is the gym leader of the Viridian City Gym. He is the eighth badge that you need to collect from. Now, there's an interesting fan theory surrounding the game that I really appreciate, because in the lore, Giovanni wanted to create Mewtwo. He wanted this all-powerful Pokemon to do his bidding, and the first Pokemon movie kind of corroborates that. So Dr. Fuji, in the game, it's on Cinnabar Island in the Pokemon Mansion. In the film, it's on New Island. But in the game, they're able to, you explore the Pokemon Mansion, and there are these diaries, and you start to see this tale starts to unfold where you have they talk about Mew, and they're able to extract DNA, and then there's this one diary entry where it says, oh, and Mew gave birth, basically, and Mewtwo was born. And then the basement of the Pokemon Mansion, and this is represented really, really well in the Let's Go games, there is a tube, there's a vat there where Mewtwo broke out of. And he escaped into the Kanto region. And that's one thing that I really appreciate them mentioning in Detective Pikachu, is that he escaped 20 years ago, which could be a reference to the movie and also to the games. But my pitch is that in the game, you need to collect the Sylph Scope, which allows you to see ghost Pokemon and capture ghost Pokemon. And you also need to collect the Master Ball. Now, in the game, Giovanni tries to steal both the Sylph Scope and the Master Ball. Well, the Sylph Scope allows you to see and capture ghost Pokemon, and ghost Pokemon can be effective against psychic Pokemon. And a Master Ball allows you to capture any Pokemon, no matter how powerful they are. So Giovanni was attempting to collect these items so that he could go after Mewtwo and capture him and keep him from wreaking havoc. Now, you could argue that Giovanni is just trying to collect him for his own criminal methods, but I believe that he was actually trying to save the world, that he realized he messed up, and he really wants to try and make that right and take Mewtwo off the playing board. So that's my theory. If you're going to do a Team Rocket movie, do a Giovanni movie, because there's a lot there, and you could really explore this other side of his character, which I think would be super cool to do. But in the context of Detective Pikachu, and we're seeing how Rhyme City is like this utopia for Pokemon and people alike to live in harmony, and they have the they discover it's the R serum or gas that drives Pokemon crazy. I like that how this plot develops. You slowly start to kind of peel back the layers, and you start to realize, oh, you thought, you know, Mewtwo was bad this whole time. Well, no, it's the humans. I'm pretty sure at this point, any movie, if there's going to be a villain, just assume it's humans. that's usually a pretty safe bet at this point. But yeah, it's this movie just did a lot of things well, and I really loved the reveals at the end, and I really liked Mewtwo's character, like once Tim was actually able to speak with him and have a conversation.
So that was actually my theory that I was texting you about before we started recording, was that this film takes place as the same, in the same place as the first movie, because you realize by the end of the first film that Mewtwo has had this change of heart to where they're going to basically go off and they're going to do something. It takes place 20 years ago, and C, it's mentioned throughout the course of this film that Tim's dad, Harry, was actually hired to basically find the Mewtwo. And that's where they find it. Now, whether or not they're drawing from the games or the movies, like, that's another thing. But I think, honestly, I think that this could have taken place within the course of this film. So if that is the theory that what I'm saying it could be correct, that means that Ash Ketchum already exists within this universe. And by the time we meet him, we could actually see him 20 years after the event of the first film.
Hmm. I like that. I think that's definitely plausible, and I'd love to see that happen. I mean, I think any way you can kind of connect these movies together and have there be a follow through with the story, I think would be really cool from the storytelling perspective, and it would give the fans more enjoyment kind of seeing how these movies connect together and keeping, you know, when the anime started, it was very much Ash Ketchum's story. So to include him in this, I think would be awesome.
And I mean, it could be just one of those like small details that only true fans are going to get. It could be something to fuel fire. Like, you look at other movies that have come out, like these theories about superhero movies, or even Get Out is another great example, where you just have these very intentionally layered films, and then you'll have directors or filmmakers or writers that'll read these things and they'll come along and actually say, that is correct. You know, this is the world that it does take place in. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how this movie progresses and ages in time to see if the things that we're theorizing about on this very podcast do come to fruition.
I totally agree. And that's one of the things I love about just doing this in general, because it's like, you know, it's May 9th, 2019 right now, and we're recording this, and in theory, it's going to be saved forever. Is we can go back to this 10, 20, 30 years from now and either look back and be like, oh, wow, like those are really interesting insights, or man, wow, we knew nothing back then. Like, the way this turned out, and it makes me, you know, I wish I got into this or like recording in some way way earlier, because even when you're removed a few years, it's kind of cool to go back. But I can only imagine if I was doing like movie reviews, or if I was just giving like my hot take on movies back when like Iron Man came out or something like that, like it'd be so interesting going back and just seeing what my thoughts were, and not knowing anything else about the universe, and just being like, oh, like who's this Nick Fury guy? Why is he talking about the Avengers Initiative? That's weird. I wonder where this is gonna go. And yeah, it's just, so it's just funny to see how time changes things and how things work. And, I always try to keep that in mind, especially when like a new Legend of Zelda game is released and when a new trailer is released. 'Cause up until now, I don't know what the next Zelda game really is going to be, the next new brand new one. And when they drop a trailer and reveal it, it's like everything I'm about to see, I'm not going to be able to unlearn. This is the only point in my life where I can say, I don't know what this game is going to be like. But that's, yeah, I think that's just an interesting piece on how time works in general. But I'd say overall, this movie was definitely enjoyable. Really, my only complaint is I wish that they had used some updated music. But one of my favorite scenes was, of course, Pikachu singing the Pokemon theme song very sadly as he walks across a bridge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, you talked about the kind of usage of like the original music. I think the end credit sequence for this was absolutely perfect. And just you kind of see where it started with as a video game, but then kind of how it progressed, and like you got to see like the alter egos of like how these characters, how they look as anime characters in the world of Pokemon. I thought that was awesome as well.
Totally. And it's so cool seeing how the series has developed over time and how they started off as sprites and the anime kind of took over. And now We have a brand new Pokemon game, the new generation, coming to the Nintendo Switch this fall. And it's going to be... I'm super excited for it, and it's just so cool seeing how far the series has come. And it's the year of Detective Pikachu, so I think it's... It gives Nintendo a lot of power that they're doing this big live-action movie and a core Pokemon game. And really, just about a year after the Let's Go games were released for the Switch, which were super fun as well. So we're getting a lot of really good Pokemon content right now.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I really respect about this world is the use of Pokemon. I think this is done really smartly. And so for this episode's Roads to Hope, if you guys are new to this show, Roads to Hope is the area of our show where we engage with our guests of the week to talk about a mental health theme throughout the whatever we're covering for that specific for this specific episode. And Pokemon are almost kind of used as not only companions, but also therapeutic animals. And I think that when you're talking and struggling a lot with, you know, suicide or depression or addiction, those, especially depression in particular, I think that animals are a brilliant way to really make you feel like not so depressed, or they're a great form of therapy. And, you know, for those times or those days where I'm feeling really down and really blue, like just laying around with my cat and just being around that and being around her really makes me feel not so sad or not so lonely, because, you know, I have someone there to, you know, just keep me company.
Totally. There's a really great comic I had seen a while back of someone depressed and sad, and they were colored in grayscale, sitting on a chair, and then a cat came and sat on their lap, and the cat's colorful and energy, and through the panel comics, it seeped into the person and warmed them, and they were able to feel happiness and just feel connected and loved. And I think that's something that animals of all kinds can definitely do, whatever animal you love. I myself have two cats, and they make my day every single day when I'm all come home from work or when I go to sleep at night. There's always a cat either sleeping on my legs or walking across my chest, and it's just wonderful. I mean, I love that. I love having, you know, animals, and I grew up without pets. My mom and grandmother were allergic, so I was never able to have any of my own. So when I was able to branch out and get on my own, it was really one of the best things for me that I was able to do. And I never really want to be at a point in my life where I don't have some kind of animal by my side, because they just make all the difference when it comes to handling all the stress and difficulties that just comes in a human world. Pets are just always there for you, and they never fail to make me happy.
Absolutely. And I think one of the best sequences in this film is right after Pikachu is basically fried, and Justice Smith's Tim is just kind of looking at him, and he's just trying to call out for help. And there's a Bulbasaur that emerges from the garden, and he just, you know, just kind of looking at him for a second. He's like, you know, and Catherine Newton's character Lucy just looks at Tim and says, you know, he doesn't understand you. And Tim just looks at him, he says, no, but he knows what I'm feeling. And you feel that look and that thing. And there have just been times where, like, man, I'm just like down, and my cat will just come up, and like they can sense that. And that's one of the things that they're really good at being able to sense. And that's the reason why I love having cats. Even when I first moved to Pennsylvania, I was living with my in-laws, and they have two dogs. And the one dog, like, I'm not by nature a dog person, but that dog just was there for me during that transition of, you know, just kind of getting back on my feet and coming out of depression again. That dog has really impacted me. So that every time we go over there, like, I just, my day gets better because of him, and just because of the experiences that we shared, where if I was lonely, he was right there. If I needed a friend or someone to talk to, he was right there. If I needed to get out of the house, I'd take him for a walk. And pets are really good therapy in that regard.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
All right. So we are setting our phasers now to the Rorschach rating scale. What would you give Detective Pikachu, sir?
I will say this movie went pretty in depth into issues of hope and loss and heartbreak, and that opening scene with the Cubone was really resonates with me quite a bit. Seeing Pokemon kind of live action for the first time ever was really cool, and I'm a big fan of Ryan Reynolds, so I'm going to give this movie 4 out of 5 Rorschachs. It was really great. I was very happy with it. I definitely recommend people go out and check it out.
I'm going to give this one a 4.5, and we didn't even really talk about the attention to detail, just how visually stunning this world is. I think that that was one of the most impressive feats for this as a film to me is – since the first trailer, just every one of my friends that is still in love with Pokemon or grew up with Pokemon, they're like, if Pokemon existed in our world, this is exactly how they would look. This is exactly how they would behave. And there's so much attention to detail, whether you are talking about the Cubone, Pikachu's fur, the skin texture of a Bulbasaur. I loved being able to see Squirtle live action, Blastoise. I can't remember the gas Pokemon that faced off against Blastoise in the fight scene, but he looked awesome. I loved the detail on Charizard. I think even in the trailer I was like, dude, this looks so good. And the detail to Mewtwo as well. Like, there's so much attention to detail. And this is probably one of the best visually stunning films that I have seen this year. And so I'm just in love with this game or this movie and just this world and in general.
Totally agree. And I loved Gengar was battling the Blastoise in that initial battle scene. And Gengar is one of my all-time favorite Pokemon. Haunter is up there, definitely in my top 5. Gengar is great, partially because he's relatively difficult to get in the game. You need to trade your Haunter to someone else for them to evolve, and then they need to be willing to trade him back so you can have your Gengar. But yeah, definitely a solid movie. Really, really great time, and I hope this opens the door for more Pokemon movies, but also just more like Nintendo adaptations in general. Like, I would love a well-done Metroid Prime movie. I would love maybe like a reboot of Super Mario or even Zelda. I think there are ways that you could do a Zelda movie and make it really successful and just really bizarre and really wonderful and stay true to all of the Legend of Zelda themes that we're so accustomed to. But yeah, Detective Pikachu, definitely a great movie, and really, honestly, I have very few complaints, which I'm very happy about coming out of this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you talked about your complaint being the lack of music. I think my only complaint is that there, as much as twists and turns as there are in this movie, there is a couple of scenes that exist within this movie that set up, and then there's supposed to be this like big twist or big reveal, and I'm like, I saw that coming. Like the end reveal of like his dad, like I saw that coming. Like the quote Mewtwo reveal, like I felt like I just kind of saw that coming. My wife's just standing, like sitting literally right next to me, and she's just like, oh, I did not see that coming.
Yeah,
I was like, really?
I don't know exactly when it entered my brain, but the thought between Pikachu's amnesia and the fact that there was no body for his dad, I thought, well, maybe his personality got sucked into Pikachu, and that's why he's able to understand him, because he has that connection. And then I absolutely thought that when our main evil character was able to input his soul into Mewtwo, I was like, okay, so this is a thing that happens now. There's absolutely something inside of Detective Pikachu that's making him act a little differently. But yeah, I think other than that, I think they did a decent job, and with foreshadowing, it was well done. And yeah, definitely a really fun time at the movies for sure.
Absolutely. So if you guys have seen Detective Pikachu, if you guys have seen the Pokemon the first movie, if you guys have played a Pokemon game or just love the franchise, make sure that you guys comment below wherever you guys are listening to this podcast, wherever you guys are streaming it, downloading it. Thank you for that. But Dan, where can people find you online, my friend?
You can find me if you want to see all of the movies that I watch on Letterboxd at DRock64. I'm slowly but surely filling in my backlog of movies. I am up to 2008 at this point, so I'm still going through my ticket stub binder and including all of the dates that I've seen the movies. So if you ever want to just go through and see that I watched Superbad in 2007, you are welcome to do so.
All right. Well, you guys can follow us everywhere: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, Twitch, YouTube, and Google, and wherever you guys get podcasts. If you guys like what we stand for and want to help us get mental health resources into schools and conventions, make sure that you guys can always support us monthly on Patreon. It opens also the door to get exclusive content that other people don't get. Or you guys can also just pick up some swag from our Etsy shop as well. We have handmade hats and cool sci-fi themed shirts over there. All that money goes back to getting mental health resources into schools. We want to thank you guys for listening. Dan, thanks for hanging out, talking Pokemon.
Thank you so much. This is a blast.
I thought you were going to say it was an electrifying conversation.
I should have. That was a missed opportunity.
All right. Well, until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing else. And remember, black is nice.